Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 17 in the series, entitled On the Essence of a Mitzvah, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning. In our previous classes, we were introduced to our garments, our levushim, the garments of the soul, namely the mediums through which the soul expresses itself. The instruments of expression are, of course, thought, speech, and action. Machshava Dibur HaMaaseh, these are the three instruments or mediums through which a soul expresses its personality, its character, its faculties, its abilities, its attributes, and so on and so forth. In the case of the divine soul, we learnt the garments, the levushim, are directed to and filled with the Torah and its mitzvahs. Taryag mitzvahs ha-Torah, the 630 mitzvahs of the Torah, that is what occupies and fills totally the three garments of thought, speech, and action. In other words, the actions that come as a consequence of the consciousness, persona, and character of the divine soul are solely deeds of mitzvahs. The words and utterances which express the divine soul are words of Torah or words which are the instruments of fulfilling a mitzvah. And finally, the thoughts of this soul, of this divine soul, are thoughts of Torah or thoughts which serve again as the medium of fulfilling a mitzvah. Specifically, Reb Shneur Zalman explained, the cognitive experiences of the divine soul, its Chabad, its faculties of Chachma Bina Das, explained at length in classes 12 through 14, are realized and expressed via the medium of thought, while the emotional and functional experiences of the soul, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferes, Netzach, Chayd, Yisayd, Malchus, discussed in class number 15, they find expression in the instruments of speech and action of Dibur and Maisa of the soul. Now, Reb Shneur Zalman continued, and this is what we learned last week, that the garments of the divine soul surpass the soul itself. In other words, in the physical realm of existence, the soul value, utility, and function of clothes is that they be worn and torn by a human being. To buy a suit or a shirt or a pair of pants or socks and hang them in your closet, perhaps in 1,000 years or in 500 years, the value will be as of that of a museum antique. But for all practical purposes, the purpose and value of a garment is that a person wears them. There exists no need for a garment per se, devoid of a human being who bears them. Thus, even when the garments do possess a bearer, a human being clothes himself within these garments, it's quite obvious that the garment is secondary in value and to the bearer of the garment, and is by its very definition subservient to him, being as it is that the whole significance of the garment is that it serves its bearer, it expresses its bearer. It lacks an inherent independent value or significance besides serving its bearer. So even when it is serving its bearer, it's of course secondary by its very definition, abnegated, subservient, tuffel in Hebrew, to the person who's wearing the garment. Now, one may assume that the same is true concerning the spiritual garments of the divine soul. So Reb Shneur Zalman informs us that this is not the case. Rather, he says, the quality of the garments surpass and infinitely surpass their very bearer, the soul itself. In other words, one may assume that the act of learning Torah and performing mitzvahs via our potentials of thought, speech, and action, the value in this does not lie mainly in their actual implementation, but rather in that which the implementation expresses and brings to light, not in the garment, but in the human being which is bearing this garment. In other words, the ultimate purpose utility and function of Torah and mitzvahs is not in their crude, physical, very simple bodily implementation, but rather in the internal commitment it expresses, in the devotion of the human being which is coming to light, in the awareness which is being demonstrated, in the passion which has been brought out. In one word, in the soul which is clothed within these garments. Not in the garments itself. To be sure, what we may think is, of course, the garment is important. Of course, even according to the above view, the actual implementation of a mitzvah, or the actual learning of Torah with your mouth, or thinking words of Torah, is important, is crucial. No question about that. But nevertheless, I would assume that the main value, the main importance, is not derived from the actual crude or brute implementation, but rather what lies in it, what is enclosed within it, what the garment expresses, not in the garment itself. Ultimately, as in the physical sense, the garment is of secondary value and is subservient to the bearer of the garment. Comes Reb Shneur Zalman and says, nay, nay, nay. The garment is greater than the soul. The quality of the garments of the soul surpass the soul itself, the nefesh, ruach, and neshama. And furthermore, le'ein ketz v'sof, they surpass the soul not with a relative difference, but rather there is an infinite value in the garments of the soul versus the soul itself. And this requires explanation. Why does it require explanation? How could one say that the actual act of quote-unquote a dry mitzvah of wrapping tefillin, wrapping the hide of an animal on your arm or on your head, or shoving matzah down your gullet on the 15th day of Nisan, or taking a willow of a brook and a myrtle, a citron, and a frond of a palm tree, and shaking it on the 15th day of Tishrei. How could one say that these physical acts surpass the value of the actual experience of the soul? Fine. I understand that they are important. They are significant. They are crucial. But are they more significant than the actual internal experience the Jew has? Even if you are going to explain to me that they are more significant, can you say that their significance is infinitely greater than the significance of the soul? It seems very difficult to understand. After last week's class, one of the distinguished members of this class came over to me and said that it seems to him that it's very simple. It's a very obvious idea. Why is it a very obvious idea? Because everyone understands that ultimately what counts in this world is not so much the internal experience, but rather the implementation of things. Saying the proper thing, doing the proper things. We all know the road to evil is paved with good intentions. Good intentions per se never brought humanity anywhere. Deed, hamaisu hu yikar, our sages say. Deed is the primary issue. The main thing is the deed, not the forces behind it. For example, he gives me an example. He says that tomorrow morning I wake up and I have a strong desire to go work, but I decide I'm not going to fulfill my desire. I'm not going to go to work. My boss is not going to pay me. But on Tuesday, I get up in the morning and I have no mood to go to work. I'm totally not interested. But I force myself out of bed and I go to work. That's what my boss wants. He does not care whether I feel for it, I don't feel for it, what my moods are, the fluctuation of my moods, it's irrelevant to him. You'll say, the main thing is the soul, not the garments of the soul. In this world, in a practical world, action, saying the proper words in the proper time, doing the right things in the right time, that's what counts. He gives me another example, take charity. You'll say, I love you, I have so much empathy and compassion for you, but I don't want to share with you my money. Another person has no compassion, no empathy, but he sees a person in need. He gives him a few dollars. So what is more significant? This person had a soul experience, but the soul did not express itself via the garments. This person had a garment experience, but the garments were not expressing any soul. Everyone understands that the garment, the implementation, the crude physical implementation is what counts. And the same is true regarding many areas of life. The bottom line is implementation, deed, not the mood, the feeling, the passion, the state of mind or heart which stands behind the deed. Another example he gave me was, says, in the morning, my wife asks me to take out the garbage. So one morning I'll say, I have so much love to you. I like you so much, but I can't take out the garbage now. The next morning you're not in the mood of taking out the garbage. You're upset at her, but you take out the garbage. That's the main thing. You did it. Your moods, your souls, it's all very nice in your own little world. But in this world, in a world of relationships, in a world where things have to be done, in a world where people are in need, in a world where work has to be implemented, that is what counts. So the same thing he said here, it seems quite obvious that the garments is the issue, the primary issue. That is ultimately what counts. But the truth is that ein hamashal deimel nimshal, as they say. The metaphor given here is totally irrelevant to the discussion that Alter Rebbe is discussing in Tanya Perek Dalet. In those issues this man brought up, justifiably, we are dealing with physical phenomenon, with materialism, with earthly reality. In this area, it's obvious and it's simple in everybody's eyes that the bottom line is the actual physical result and consequence. The end result. Everyone understands that the point in you going to work is not that you feel for it. The point is that your boss needs you there to sell his products, to get onto the telephone and sell his products. What is significant over here is the concrete end result. He needs you on the telephone talking to certain people. And that is achieved when you get out of your house and you go to work. When your wife asks you in the morning to take out the garbage, what is needed over here is that the garbage should be outside in the alley. That is what is required over here, nothing else. The end result is the objective. That is the significance. Thus, it's quite obvious that if your moods dictate that you should do it, but physically you do not do it, it's worthless. It's of no use. The poor person needs money. He does not need anything else. He needs physical money so he should be able to go to the grocery store and buy milk for his children. Milk and bread. That is what he needs. The end result, the concrete end result, is the sole significance of it. If you help him towards that goal, you have achieved something. If not, you have achieved nothing. So that's quite obvious. Therefore, it's obvious that in all these areas of life, the garments are the primary thing. They are the essence. They are the main focus and emphasis. To do the right thing, to say the proper words, and if it's important, to think the proper thoughts. The concrete result, that is what we want. But over here, we are discussing something of totally a different nature. We are dealing with the method of a connection between a human being, a Jew, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem. We are talking about a relationship of a Jew with what is true, absolute, eternal in life. We are talking about molding and crafting a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We are talking about the religious, spiritual life of the individual. We are dealing with his relationship, with his union, with his bond, with Hashem. Over here, it seems that the garments of the soul have no inherent significance. Can anyone explain me? What type of relationship with Hashem, with what is true in life, is conveyed via hearing sounds from a ram's horn on the first day of Tishrei? What type of spiritual content and relationship is achieved via shearing hair of a sheep and making out of it shearing wool of a sheep and making out of it fringes for your body? I understand the use and the function of these garments as expressions, as demonstrations of something deeper, of something internal. They demonstrate the commitment, dedication, devotion, submission, awareness, passion, subservience, self-nullification, acceptance of the divine yoke, an internal experience they express. That expresses a bond with Hashem. There is a devotion, there is a commitment. Something changed within you. The garments are expressing it, are bringing it to light, are bringing it to the forefront. Yes, without the actual implementation, we all know internal experience do not suffice. Fine. So the significance ultimately in shaking the hadas, the Arava, the Estrig, and the Lulavis, in the devotion, the awareness, the passion, the commitment, the submission, which is being expressed, which is being demonstrated. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, no! The garments are not expressions of the soul, and thus ultimately of secondary value or even identical value to the soul. The garments surpass the soul. The garments surpass the soul infinitely. And the question is, Ribbono Shel Olam, in the garment itself, there is something more special in the soul? What has occurred when the human being physically implemented that mitzvah? Did anything change in the man? Did it touch him and affect him on a level deeper than his most external dimensions of existence? This requires explanation. Is it clear? Any questions? Okay. Your question is, it seems that we're elevating Maisa above Machshava and Dibur. No, I gave examples of Maisa, but the same is true regarding mitzvahs of Dibur and mitzvahs of Machshava. Let's take a mitzvah which is dependent upon man's faculty of speech. For example, saying Shema twice a day. There is the actual act of uttering the Shema. Then there is the soul that is enclosed within the act. So the act of saying Shema would express and demonstrate your acceptance of the divine yoke, your passion to cleave to Hashem, your awareness of the divine reality. And that is very good. That is very powerful. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, no. The levush. What is the levush? The actual utterance of these words. The crude aspect of it. Not the emotional, spiritual, psychological dynamic it is representing. The physical utterance of your lips is not only identical in significance to its bearer, to the soul, but it surpasses it, and it surpasses it infinitely. The reason I did use examples of Maisa, because over there, the distinction between the soul experience and the external implementation is sometimes more obvious. But the same is true, the same exact is true regarding thought and utterance. The same is even true regarding thought. Now, halacha is, for example, that when you learn Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition, one must understand, comprehend what he is learning. If not, he was not yotzei. He did not perform the mitzvah of learning Torah. Torah Shebiksav, however, a human being can read and say the words or think the words, not understand what he is saying, and nevertheless, Shulchan Aruch Semenon Erechayim says that the person was Mekayim, he performed the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So over here you have a very powerful example where the garments are stripped from an inner soul which is implementing and expressing its cognitive faculties. Over here, thought and speech are divorced from the internal faculties. So this actually requires explanation. If you were dealing again with physical phenomena, I have no problem. Of course, the bottom line is the deed, not the mood. But you're dealing with Torah mitzvahs. You're dealing with a relationship to Hashem. A relationship to Hashem, by definition, means a relationship. So Ribbono Shel Olam, you took the hide of an animal. You wrapped it 7 times around your arm. I understand that expresses something. To say that that actual physical act is infinitely more significant than the spiritual relationship. Why? What lies in it? What is the mystery? What is the secret of it? This the Alter Rebbe has to explain. So the Alter Rebbe comes along and he explains it in a few words. In the Daf Ches Amud Aleph, The third line from the bottom, he uses four words to explain this enigma. K'may shekasuv b'Zohar, as it says in Zohar, da'iraisa v'kutsha b'richu kulachat, that Torah and Hashem are one. And then he goes on to explain what is the meaning in this statement of the Zohar, that Torah and Hashem are one. And over here, he conveys to us the message. True, he says, from the point of view of the garments per se, they are only garments. And garments, by their very definition, are of secondary value to the bearer of the garments. That is true. And therefore, garments, by their very entity, fall short in relationship to the neshama, to the soul itself. But over here, we are talking about another issue totally. We are dealing with garments of Torah and mitzvahs. Since we are dealing with garments of Torah and mitzvahs, and Torah and mitzvahs are one with Hashem, so the tables turn around. And I want you to understand this concept very clearly. Within your faculties of Chachma, Bina, Das, conceive it, comprehend it, and apply it. So therefore, I will elaborate on this. There is an old Yiddish saying, a mensch kennisht a ribbish bring in sein eigener Kopf, while the Kopf springt mit. It means a man cannot jump over his head, own head, because his head jumps with him. This anecdotal saying relates a profound truth. Man is man. Man is confined within human parameters, limited by intrinsic boundaries. As much as man attempts to transcend himself, to free himself from his very shackles of existence, he will always remain confined within parameters of human existence. His head will always be jumping with him. To jump over his head, that is impossible. It's an oxymoron as long as he lives in this world. If this is the case, a very powerful question comes to mind. And that is, man seeks to create a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, with Hashem. How can man possibly achieve this? The difference between the human being and Hashem is not a relative difference. It's an absolute difference. It is the difference between the finite and the infinite. So although a human being has a spiritual entity to him, and has spiritual experiences, and seeks and aspires to touch the divine, and to come closer with what is true and absolute and eternal in life, nevertheless, it seems that it's impossible by the very definition of him being man to actually create such a real connection with Hashem. If you'll ask me, how do I connect with another human being? I know how I connect. The other human being is a human being just like I. There are very powerful common denominators between us. We are both human. I have needs, and he has needs. I have a personality, and he has a personality. I have characteristical traits, and he does. I have things I love and despise, and he does. I have ideas and insights that I love to think about, contemplate. I have involvements that I marvel in, and he does as well. So I connect to him by living a life which is connected to him, to his personality, to his characters, to who he is. But this cannot apply regarding cultivating a relationship with Hashem. Hashem is unified, indivisible, definitionless, descriptionless, infinite, unequivocal, unlimited, absolute, perfect, transcending boundary, form, composition, and so on and so forth. How can a human being who is fragmented, compartmentalized, divisible, defined, finite, mortal, limited, relative, deficient? How can this man possibly rise beyond his intrinsic limitations and boundaries and touch the divine? A human being, after all said and done, I had a teacher used to say in Yiddish, a mensch is not a mensch, and I'm all das euch nicht. Man is but a human being, and sometimes not even that. But even when man is a human being, to his best, nevertheless, the tools, the resources, which he possesses to deal with, to aspire and to search, are finite tools, are finite resources. He was given a subjective mind to think with and a relative heart to feel with. And the greatest of men cannot rise beyond this very inherent limitation. Not because we are evil or negative or bad or because we have done the wrong thing, but for the simple fact that we are created human beings. There is an internal secret. I'm sure some of you will relate to this. That many writers, musicians, poets, novelists, dramatists, Sheer, they think that at a certain point in the midst of their composition, they suddenly become divine. A poet feels that in the midst of his poem, or a musician, in the middle of that song, he reached the absolute. But this does not begin with this century or even 1,000 years ago. It begins with the words of the serpent of the Nachash, the Chava, in Bereishis Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hey. That time the Nachash turned to Chava and he said, V'yiyisem ke'aleikim yoydei tovera. If you eat from a fruit of this tree of knowledge, you will become like God, knowers of good and evil. And that was the most powerful temptation. And since that day, this temptation has been guiding and directing people that they feel that when you eat a certain fruit, whether in the physical sense or in the metaphysical sense, you turn into a divine reality. And this is on many levels. But of course, anyone who has any understanding of the nature that the Torah talks about Hashem, it's totally ridiculous and it's an oxymoron by definition. Because the difference between humanity and Hashem is not a relative one. It's an absolute one. It's not a finite one. It's an infinite one. And let's take, for example, a metaphor of numbers. If I have $1 and you have $1,000,000, you are quite wealthier than me. But nevertheless, there is a relative difference. $1,000,000 is ultimately composite of many ones, of 1,000,000 ones. But if someone theoretically can have an infinite amount of numbers, if that would be possible, physically it's impossible, everyone understands that relative to that person's wealth or possession, 1,000,000, 10,000,000, and 10 billion are absolutely identical because they are all equally far from the end, which is infinite. And 1,000,000 does not bring you any closer to the infinite reality than 10 or 20 or 30. You're equally far, infinitely far. So as much as man rises and grows and seeks and attempts and yearns and aspires and develops his faculties par excellence, and he has a brilliant mind and a brilliant heart and extremely spiritually sensitive and a powerful soul, this does not bring him one iota closer to the divine reality. I look at this heart and this heart. This is a heart which is worth $1,000,000,000. And this is a heart which is maybe worth $10. These differences exist in the realm of the finite reality. But when you're dealing with an unequivocal, absolute, undefined HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is, by the way, the reason he's called HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We discussed in Perek Beis the words of the Maharal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu means the aloof one, blessed be he, to denote Hashem's Hashem's descriptionless and definitionless character. You can't even use the word character because he is characterless, so he is aloof, distinct, separated from any definition whatsoever. So how are you going to create a connection? Through what? What in the world can you do? Through a powerful, overwhelming, intense meditative experience? What is that ultimately? It means an expansion of your consciousness, an elevation of your horizons. It means soaring in the world of humanity. But after all said and done, let's say you reach the limits of humanity. But a mensch is not a mensch. Man is but a human being. So at what point can you bridge the infinite gulf that separates between the divine reality and the human reality? It would seem like that from Hashem's perspective, all our attempts to connect with spirituality is similar. We go to a playground and we see a huge sandbox. And there are dozens of children playing in the sandbox. And all us, so to speak, mature adults know that the sandbox belongs to children who believe that sand and playing with sand is the ultimate pleasure and delight of life. And this is where they gain their psychological sustenance from. Fine. And we adults, kivayachal, have more busier things to get involved in, to be busy with. And in the sandbox itself, the children don't look at it like the adults. They take it very seriously. And one child managed to build a taller mountain of sand, and another child managed to build a smaller mountain of sand. From an objective point of view, it seems like that our whole big universe, including Hale Bopp Comet and everything contained within it, is ultimately one large sandbox. And we're all playing around and making ourselves and each other dirty with the sand, and some of us manage to build more successful mountains